Welcome to Physique Star Radio, brought to you by Myotropics and Dr. Scott Connolly. Here are your hosts, Ian Lauer and Vince Andrich.
Hi, welcome to Physique Star Radio. I'm your host, Ian Lauer. Joining us today is Vince Andrich. How are you today, Vince?
I'm great, Ian. How you doing?
Oh, wonderful. It's time to get this show on the road. It's long awaited and glad we're finally on the air. So, a lot of times people are talking about training for physique and we're comparing it to bodybuilding and we're going back and forth. One of the things I want to talk to you, Vince, about was just the difference in training or what you believe is the best way to train for physique, say, in comparison to bodybuilding.
Well, I think that they're very similar, except the goal is different. And one of the things that I've found over the years is that if it's not just me, it's several of our bodybuilding buddies don't really do the periodization that they read about, the old school strength phase, hypertrophy, and then strength endurance, like to get cut.
Right, which is great in theory, but how often do we do that for 3 months at a time, right?
Right. And so it's like, if you look at the research, 6 to 12 reps pretty much does the job, and you got to do multiple sets. So, my focus has been to kind of get people onto that track. Mm-hmm. So then they can start learning how to do the work, do the movements, look at their physique and figure out what body parts may be weak, what may be strong. And then, from there they can do other things, like if they want a superset, if they want to do other training intensity kind of techniques. Mm-hmm. But really straight sets, it's really the bread and butter of the whole deal. And if you can't learn how to do that, then you're wasting your time with forced reps and everything else.
So you're saying standing on one leg, balancing on some sort of rubberized device while patting your belly is not the way to get shredded for men's competition?
No, right. I think that whole movement has set bodybuilding and physique training back. There's no room for it, for sure. And I don't even know if there's any place for it in sports training, but.
Well, I go through this conversation with people a number of times, and when it comes to functional training, I believe if you're performing a functional movement in your training, it should duplicate or be very similar to that which you're actually trying to replicate. It shouldn't be a circus maneuver, but kind of getting off the subject here, I wanted to ask you about your book, because you have a new ebook out that actually is geared towards physique competitors and those trying to get shredded year-round.
Yeah, that's right. It's an ebook. It's called Physique Athlete Guide 1.0. And it's really a distillation of some of the things we just talked about, which is, do you need to periodize? No. What should you really be focused on? What is intensity? I mean, people say train with, 75-85% of your one rep max. So are you going to do your one rep max in every movement? Of course not. No one does that. And so the idea is to really get into a rep range where you're pushing yourself, but you are not just focusing on, okay, I got 315 in the bench today for one. That's not the measure. That's not what we're looking for here.
Well, it's difficult because the first thing everybody asks you is, what do you bench? They don't ever say, what do you externally rotate to keep your shoulders healthy? That's not question number one. But really, if you're trying to develop that well-rounded physique long term, you have to stay healthy. And the one rep maxes can be dangerous. I mean, how like you say, you mentioned you don't always do one rep max in every exercise. I've never really come across a guy in the gym and have him say, I'm maxing out on my side raises today. I'm hoping to go for 55s for a single rep with good. I mean, you don't hear that. So you make a good point. It's finding a weight that is going to work within your range.
Right. Yeah. And if you stay within the range, then most everything else starts to work itself out, because if you can't get six, let's say, then you need to lower the weight. If you can get 12, then you should increase the weight. Mm-hmm. So you're. It's like the old, I don't know if you remember when the Life Cycle first came out with the hill profile, which is 12-minute hill profile. That warm up and then that interval training that it takes you through, mm-hmm, was designed to increase your heart's capacity to coarse blood through your veins. And it was developed for guys that go into space because they had limited amount of time to train. So basically, it's an efficient way of getting your heart healthy. Okay, it's not endurance, but it makes your heart very strong and very healthy. The same kind of thing with training, I believe, your muscles. There needs to be a training zone. And so if you stay within a training zone, you get a training effect.
Well, it makes perfect sense. You make an interesting point or statement there when you say endurance training, because I think that most people think of endurance training as a marathon. Or something you can do for 100 reps. That would be the traditional view of endurance training. And with all the very short workouts that are out there now, we're talking 20 minutes or less, that sort of thing. Sometimes we forget about workout endurance, meaning multiple sets and getting the volume in. Now, I like a lot of volume. Now, sometimes I'll do the high intensity, low number of sets, but very frequently I'm doing a lot of sets. What's your thought on the volume?
Well, I believe in the volume argument versus the extremely low sets. I think you can get a lot out of less if you're not a competitor and on like a bodybuilding routine where you're the maximum amount of muscle mass is what you're looking for, let's say. Mm-hmm. But if you're training for your physique, and this is one of the things I point out in the book, you can have a great plan, but there might be one day you go into the gym and you're like, hey, I'm not really feeling like doing 12 sets or 16 sets for chest.
No, Vince, that's bad news. You have to do it. No.
No, right. Well, that's why this is an art. Okay, there's right. Some science to it, and the whole thing is an art. You go in one day and you go, okay, I'm going to do a few less sets, but I'm going to do them maybe a little harder. And then there's other days when you're going to go maybe a little less intense, like power lifters and strength athletes always try to leave one or two reps in the can. You can do that and get your volume in. You get the same effect. There's no doubt about it.
And when you talk about it being an art and going into the gym, and if you're feeling a little off, I know personally, like let's say I'm going in for a leg day, and I'm just not feeling as strong as I'd like to feel starting off that day. Oftentimes what I'll do is I'll sit down on the leg press, or I'll put a really light weight on the squat rack, like 95 pounds or whatever light, and I'll crank out 50 reps, 5-0. And once I get through that, my heart rate's up, my endorphins are flowing, and my workout is underway, and I'm feeling much better and getting a lot of volume, moving a lot of total weight.
Well, that's because you've got the experience, and when you go in you're going into the gym, and you haven't just learned how to drive a car yet. Okay. You know how to drive a car. And so if you have to take a side street, you know how to get to this destination. That's the difference between someone who winds up getting some experience in this game, and you start to realize that it's not just a race to see how great you can look in a few weeks. You always want to, look better quicker. But when you wind up getting older, you're going to realize, oh, wow, I can still have a great physique, not only in my 20s, but my 30s, my 40s, 50s, because I learned how to actually train and do the work, and it wasn't something that just burnt me out.
Well, that's a good point, not getting burnout. And that's why oftentimes you'll hear recommendations to take a week off here and there. For some of it's difficult to do that. You do get addicted to working out, but you do have to listen to your body and keep yourself healthy, thinking long term.
Yeah, I think we're all guilty of thinking, oh man, I'm not going to look as tight if I don't, train today. But you force yourself to take a couple days off, or even just one extra rest day. That, again, I always like to consider that under the heading of the art of it. Mm-hmm. It's not, this isn't so rigid. It's rigid, but once you learn how to do it, you're basically, you're in control of it. You're driving. And there was an interesting piece of a book that Fred Hadfield wrote years ago. It was Bodybuilding, a Scientific Approach. And he said, power lifters are like, let's say, a lineman. The ball is snapped in football. The ball is snapped, and they're going to crack someone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? A bodybuilder, you're more of a skill position, okay? You have to think a little bit more. Not that linemen don't need to think, and I'm sure on the high level they have a lot of really, really
yeah, those guys are making as many calls
stuff.
As Eli Manning is.
Right. But his point was that, you know, you need to be able to maneuver through the gym to get the training effect.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just saying, okay, I'm going to go bench today and that'll do it.
Well, according to 90% of the people on Monday, that's exactly how you get it done.
And just they look Monday's
national bench and flat bench, no incline. Let's not try to focus on the upper pecs. Let's build those ski slopes, right?
Well, you get. ski slopes with turnip thighs and all the other things that you know are attributed to a bunched up physique from someone who is just thinking that the basics do it, and the basics have a great deal of an effect, but I'm into the geometry of it, and we all, you know, instinctively, we've all known, you know, you do bench press to the neck or an incline dumbbells, and it feels different than a flat bench, okay? So there's something going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't, you're probably too young to realize or have heard the old nonsense of you can never shape a muscle. It's all or nothing. Don't worry about it. You get what you get. You know, that kind of came out of the Nautilus
area. No matter
area.
My age, I refuse to believe that.
No. I never believed it because, you know, I would do stuff and I was like, I don't feel that. So how could it do anything?
Mm-hmm.
And so that really, you know, that people get to that or athletes get to that sometimes quicker than others, but there's this macho attitude that comes with bodybuilding and weight training. And I think some of these ideas or notions that you have to lift extremely heavy and do, you know, like stay on certain basic movements, maybe too long without rotating out on a movement that'll make the shape of that muscle look better,
right.
is still prevailing.
Yeah, I think it's important to, well, back to your point about the basics, I think it's important to think about balancing the basics. Now, in that, you can get great results for your entire body with essentially, you know, 99% just basic movements, but with minor variations and balancing them throughout your body. I think that's important to remember when you're training.
Right, and everyone's anatomy isn't the same. It's, you know, the length of their bones and everything else. So what I get out of a flat bench press is different than someone else.
Well, and taking the flat bench press, for example, a lot of times you see these guys that arch so much, they may as well be doing a decline bench. And you put them on an incline bench, then they're really pressing, you know, what would be essentially be a flat. So I think, I guess this just goes back to, I think, to develop that well-rounded chest, you need to really focus a lot on the incline movement just to even start the majority of your workouts with that.
Right. Well, and that goes back to someone I think I mentioned to you the other day. It's, you know, the Vince Gironda and mm-hmm. our listeners, if they've never heard of Vince, they should look him up because he was one of the first proponents of physique, and he called it cosmetic bodybuilding, which is you pick the exercises to do what you want them to do. Like a sculptor, you don't just do them blindly because some book said to do these three movements. And once you get that, there's a lot of empowerment that comes with it because you're like, wait a minute, I can actually change the way my body looks. I'm not just building some muscle, I'm actually shaping it. And that becomes a lifelong deal.
Oh, yeah. And the first thing is to realize and believe that you can accomplish that. And once you do, then you'll utilize the tools to make it happen.
That's a good point. It's kind of going back to the whole Nautilus thing. And I was around when those gyms popped up and, you know, you went in there for your 1 hour Martinizing, so to speak. Right. And, there's two things that came out of that for me, which is one, it's actually, they were trying to get you to not overtrain. That was the basic premise, but thinking about doing max weight in every movement, let's say, because it had to be all or nothing, and is psychologically just as damaging as knowing you're going to go in and train with some volume, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
It's like someone's going to put a gun to your head. I remember, you know, pulling up in the Nautilus parking lot going, okay, this is not the day I'm want to do this. not that way. I want to train, but I don't want that. And then, you know, the other thing is a lot of these, the proponents of that took the one set or low volume to the extreme and by making excuses. In other words, only the guys taking steroids can do volume. So therefore, whatever I get out of Nautilus is my, or my low volume, is my genetic limit. And they limited themselves, all of them, because they're not all hard gainers, okay? And if you look through all those books, they're all like claiming that they're hard gainers, like all of us are easy gainers. It's ludicrous.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, speaking of gaining, maybe in case people aren't aware of this, you're an accomplished author beyond just your ebook. You wrote, was it the fourth edition of the Supplement Review Guide?
That's right.
And also you have a new supplement line coming out. And what is the name of that again, please?
The brand name is Myotropics.
Myotropics. So I guess this is a good opportunity for us to discuss, how do you rebuild those muscles? Now, obviously, we need to eat real food, but if you're using supplements, and with your experience from writing the guide, what would you say are some important supplements to help in, I guess, spot building? Because we can't spot reduce, but we can spot build muscle. So what are some recommendations you may have for some of these physique athletes that are staying natural?
Well, when it comes to supplementation, I believe that, and you make a good point about food, I believe that the protein component is arguably, I mean, probably not even worth arguing about. It's the most important, because unless you're going to carry around Tupperware all the time, which some guys would do, but I was back in the day when we would struggle, you know, bringing tuna cans with us everywhere because you couldn't get a good tasting protein shake. Now you can.
All right.
And so I think the advent of better tasting protein shakes and or even I prefer meal replacement, because I don't believe that when you have a meal that you necessarily need to be devoid of carbs. Once it's okay, it's, you don't have to have carbs all the time, but a little bit of carbohydrate increases, you know, the duration of the protein synthetic machinery.
Well, doesn't it increase the uptake and just in general increases the uptake of the protein if you have some carbohydrate? Is that true?
It can. I mean, well, the initial signaling, I believe, happens, you know, either or. Mm-hmm. I mean, with or without. Okay. But what happens is once those amino acids kind of start dissipating, the carbohydrate keeps it up higher, and so, you know, that's one of the things that I'm very fortunate. You know, Myotropics is myself, but mainly Dr. Scott Conley, who did Metrex and came out with a lot of other innovations, and his experience with protein metabolism and really protein economy, we like to call it, which is, that's what you're fighting. If you want more muscle and less fat, you're fighting to keep your protein economy up, because when you lose protein, then you're burning it as fuel and you're not going to look as lean. So especially if you're a physique guy, you know, you got to stay tighter on your diet year round. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very, very delicate balance. And so there's specific types of proteins that in a supplement do better than others. And there's actually carbohydrates that do better than others. And so, you know, that's really the focus of, if you want to talk about our first product, just briefly, that's the focus of that. And, you know, we believe if you get that part solidified, then we can start adding other things to it. But, you know, you get your biggest bang for your buck by, you know, taking a couple servings or at least a serving of something like that. Mm-hmm. And in back in the day, and there's nothing wrong with, you know, meal replacements and stuff like that. But I think a lot of athletes have started, they rely on, let's say, whey. And so they go 20, 30, 50 grams away. And the research shows that 20 or 30 basically stimulates protein synthesis. The rest start getting oxidized as glucose. So it's no wonder a lot of guys, A, can't get as lean as they want, and then B, they're not putting down as much lean muscle, because whey protein doesn't act like tissue protein. And tissue protein is how we got here.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have fast-acting protein until the 90s. So it's a very recent thing. And so I don't, you know, our protein machinery isn't geared to handle the, you know, just
our
a bunch
biological
of protein.
You're talking about our biology.
Our biology.
Right.
And in other words, you know, the protein machinery starts, let's say, with whey protein, but then when those amino acids aren't available anymore, the machine has nothing to make material out of.
Right.
And so you know, that's why this whole argument of fast and slow proteins has been out there, because and the other point you made is food. Most guys diet on food. Why? Because it works a little better. Because it takes energy to dismantle the proteins and some of the carbohydrates. That all takes energy. There's a spin that goes with that. There's not much spin with whey protein.
Right.
There's not much. There's not much spin with, you know, table sugar. Same kind of concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then of course with the different amino acids and different profiles for different protein sources, like you mentioned, when your body's working with only whey or real food, or other protein sources for that matter, there are a lot of factors to consider if you're looking for a good protein replacement or meal replacement. But well, Vince, you know what? I think it's about time that I get ready to move on to our next physique star. Thanks again so much for joining us, Vince.
Appreciate it, Ian. It's going to be a pleasure doing these shows.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be awesome. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, thanks for joining us here at Physique Star Radio, and stay tuned.
Fusion Bodybuilding makes bodybuilding's strongest supplements, and they're committed to giving back to you. Fusion Bodybuilding not only want to promote the bodybuilding lifestyle, but they also want to help build the sport. Bodybuilding is all they do. It's their obsession. You know the feeling. That's why you're here. Visit Fusion Bodybuilding at FusionBodybuilding.com or join in on the conversation on the Fusion Bodybuilding fan page on Facebook, where you'll find IFBB Pro Q&As, contest giveaways, and nothing but in-depth bodybuilding talk. Fusion Bodybuilding, bodybuilding's strongest supplements. Head over to FusionBodybuilding.com today. On March 17, 2012, St. Patrick's Day weekend, First Form and Hydrolyze Ultra present the First Form Pro Women's Physique, Fitness, and Bikini Championship, along with the First Form NPC Midwest Bodybuilding Fitness Figure Physique Bikini and Men's Physique Championship, a national qualifier. This event has so many perks for both athletes and fans alike. Just ask the over 1,300 guests that attended last year's event. Taking place at the St. Louis University Bush Student Center, you'll watch IFBB Pro and future superstar Mike Liberatore and current IFBB Pro superstar Kai Green as they light up the stage with their posing routines. Six-time Fitness Olympia Adela Garcia will be in attendance. The top male and female pros and top amateurs from across the country are coming to St. Louis. Plus, the RX Muscle Model Search is taking place. Here's your chance to win some great prizes, get a photo shoot, and also be featured on RXMuscle.com. Come meet the top supplement companies in attendance at their booths with free samples. March 17th, 2012 in St. Louis, Missouri. All contest information can be found at NPCMidwest.com, including tickets and prices. Don't miss it. Go to NPCMidwest.com for all information. P28 High Protein Bread is the official bread of RX Muscle. Are you looking to incorporate more protein into your meals or just want to enjoy bread again? Then look no further. Try the 100% natural P28 High Protein Bread. P28 High Protein Bread is a formulated revolutionary breakthrough product. Packed with whey protein isolate, 14 grams of protein per slice, 12 grams of carbs, 8 essential amino acids, and made with 100% whole wheat. Fear bread no more. Build a better body with P28. Order today at highproteinbread.com. P28 is also now available at bodybuilding.com and many other retailers. Order now. Highproteinbread.com. P28 bread. RX Muscle approved. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Now, it's time for Muscle University Radio with Dave Palumbo and Dr. Scott Connolly.
Welcome to the first installment of Muscle University. I'm Dave Palumbo, and I'm joined by Dr. Scott Connolly, one of the world's premier experts in protein metabolism and the owner of Myotropics Nutrition. Scott, I've interviewed many times on Heavy Muscle Radio, and I know our listeners have been dying, waiting for several years now to kind of get a chance to listen to us chat and discuss exercise science, nutrition, supplementation, and so on. And here we are. And we'll have a weekly forum here to talk about new topics, and new stuff that comes out in the news. And without belittling the point, because people have heard us interact before, this week I really want to discuss a relatively new, recently discovered hormone that's been demonstrated to have effects on fatty acid metabolism in people who exercise. This hormone, irisin, is known to be released in response to exercise. I had never heard about it before reading about it just recently. You personally told me that you had heard about irisin's role is in the body.
Well, first, give some background about what this compound actually represents. Irisin is actually what people in molecular biology refer to as a multifunction cytokine, or in this particular case, the article references it as a myokine, which essentially means a secreted protein that has systemic distribution that has effects distant from the cell or tissue location in which it's produced. So in that regard, it's hormone-like in the sense that it is produced locally, released into the systemic circulation, and has distant effects on other tissues, separate and distinct from the tissue that elaborated it. It's essentially a derivative of a very important compound that has long-standing association with exercise adaptation, and that compound is called PGC1. I'm going to just
it's one of those prostaglandins, right? It's one of those prostaglandins.
Well, actually, its actual chemical name is difficult to mouthful. It's peroxisome proliferator activated receptor gamma coactivator 1 alpha. In other words, PGC.
That's a mouthful.
1 alpha. It is a mouthful, but it's an important compound because it is a transcriptional coactivator that regulates a multitude of genes that are involved in energy metabolism at the whole body level. This protein interacts with a nuclear receptor, which is also well known to be associated with controlling influences over energy homeostasis. It's a member of the PPAR family. In this case, this protein, PGC1 alpha, interacts directly with a nuclear receptor of that family known as PPAR gamma. That interaction, this is a cofactor of the transcription factor PPAR gamma. A transcription factor is simply a protein that is capable of binding to a specific region of DNA. And once that binding has taken place to the specific DNA sequences to which it's targeted, a controlling influence or a regulation of the rate or, magnitude of transcription takes place. Transcription is simply a copying process. You can think of it as a photocopy of a DNA segment onto a waiting messenger RNA. And the messenger RNA obviously then is the carrier that translocates out of the nucleus into the cell to direct protein synthesis. So this process of transcription at the nuclear level is the sort of managerial decision-making that occurs in all cells. It's directed from the nucleus and exported as a message to the cytosol or the interior of the cell where the protein synthetic machinery is immediately commanded to perform certain protein synthetic functions. So from the standpoint of a nodal point of control with respect to molecular biological events, these activators are not transcription factors themselves. What they do is an activator will bind to a transcription factor, and upon its binding, the complex is altered in such a way that the efficiency or the intensity of the response to the transcription factor at the DNA level is modulated, either upwards or downwards. So co-activators of transcription factors, as this PGC1 alpha is, are extremely potent compounds because they can have influences that proceed downstream in a multitude of different directions and involve just a fusillade of very important cellular regulatory processes. And in this case, PGC1 alpha is a very important player in the control of a whole host of metabolic functions in muscle cells, as is other elements of the compound's effect in other tissues. So with that background, this PGC1 alpha being a transcriptional co-activator that has all these multitude of biological endpoints and programs that are related to energy homeostasis, has a known sort of modulating effect induced by exercise. For many years now, it has been shown that vigorous exercise, and historically, the studies that have focused on this have used high-intensity endurance exercise programs to look at this effect. And in those circumstances, as well as very sophisticated animal studies that involve, you know, whale running or weighted swimming and rodents and so forth, there's a rapid and profound upregulation of the production of this PGC1 alpha in response to the exercise. What this new paper further elaborates on is that this induction of this, you know, pluripotent PGC1 alpha compound appears to lead to a secondary production of a protein that has been essentially, you know, cataloged from the standpoint of gene, you know, identification as known as FNDC5. That just, again, refers to a nomenclature issue. It's a gene that encodes a membrane protein, and membrane proteins are classified. In this case, the FNDC5 gene encodes a type 1 membrane protein, which means that the protein is subjected to further processing after it is discharged from its location of production. And that's characteristic of a lot of different proteins that have widespread somatic effects on energy metabolism, growth responses, et cetera. In fact, some of the growth factors that I've been interested in that occur in mammalian milks, for example, the fibroblast growth factors, the epidermal growth factors and IGFs and things like that, all are processed in a similar way in that they're manufactured and then they're cleaved proteolytically, which just means they're chopped up into smaller proteins, and the active protein is released, you know, from the site of production as this altered cleaved protein. And that's what happens to produce irisin. And irisin is a funky name, again, so named by people who don't get out enough by virtue of the fact that Iris, the Greek god of, you know, messaging, was the sort of prototype model to give this compound irisin, from the Greek god Iris, the messenger. So this protein, once it's cleaved,
let me just stop you, Scott, because I know that probably our listeners are a little lost. Give us a brief recap of exactly what you said, but very simplistically, so that everyone could follow what's going on from this point forward.
Okay. Now, there is a transcriptional co-activator, a very important molecule that is upregulated, or its production is markedly enhanced in response to intense exercise. That intermediate is called PGC1 alpha. A very important compound that has effects all over the place with respect to energy metabolism and mitochondrial biogenesis in particular. This compound, having been upregulated as a direct result of exercise stimulation, to another compound, which ultimately is proteolytically chopped up into a small molecule known as irisin. And this irisin, having been induced by the exercise stimulates, activates very profound changes in subcutaneous adipose tissue, which have been characterized as the stimulation of what is called browning. You've heard of brown fat, white fat, and so forth. In humans, there is a very small quantity of typical brown fat. And typical brown fat is identified by several characteristics, the most important of which is that brown fat contains an abundance of the uncoupling proteins, particularly uncoupling protein 1. So one of the ways to identify brown fat with chemical, you know, identification means is to look and search for UCP expression, particularly UCP1 expression. And if you find it, you basically are dealing with an adipose tissue that has characteristics of brown fat. Now, brown fat in other mammals was always believed to have evolved as a mechanism to mediate the response to cold or shivering.
Is that when you look outside your window in the freezing cold winter and you see these squirrels running around, that they can actually stay out there and survive in that cold weather?
Yeah, they have the ability, you know, to stimulate the activity of brown fat cells, which generate a large, you know, response in UCPs, particularly UCP1. And this is a very thermogenic type of compound. So the correlation or the linkage between mitochondrial biogenesis and increase in oxidative capacity and the ability to oxidize fat, in particular through the beta oxidation sequencing in mitochondria, is an end result of this hormone irisin's release and subsequent uptake and activation in adipose tissue. So it's one of the examples among many that are now emerging in the molecular biology field with reference to skeletal muscle and exercise adaptations that show categorically that the role of muscle as a mediator of not only sort of local metabolic events, which are substantive because it is one of the largest reservoirs for glucose disposal in the body, but also adaptations to exercise, particularly high intensity exercise, have been known to produce these subcellular adaptations, these productions of these transcripts and their co-activators that downstream of the exercise event can have systemic whole body effects that influence a whole range of important biochemical events that have to do with energy metabolism, energy expenditure, energy oxidation as fat or carbohydrate. All of these parameters are influenced distantly from the muscle tissue itself as an important adaptive response to the exercise. Now, from the standpoint of our listeners, as I said earlier, historically, this has been really looked at with respect to the adaptations that accrue with endurance training. And it's been, you know, known for some time, or at least, you know, assumed for some time that the resistance training response with respect to this particular adaptation, i.e. the elaboration of enhanced PGC1 alpha production, has been relatively, you know, small to absent in an isolated case. There's one publication from the McMaster group in Canada that looked at a 10-week resistance training protocol that was essentially trying to distinguish at the molecular level the adaptive response differentiation between a typical endurance training protocol versus a typical resistance training protocol. And as part of their measurement array, they included not only the myogenic regulatory growth factor responses, but also some of these more nuanced responses relating to mitochondrial biogenesis, and PGC1 alpha was one of the, you know, of the metrics that they included in their data set. And in that particular study, which is really the only one that I'm aware of that is current and well done with current methods, didn't show a significant effect in the resistance training group as it had.
Irisin is mostly released in response to endurance exercise, is what you're saying.
As of this day, most of the documentation about PGC1 induced increases following exercise have been linked to endurance training. However, there is a very recent, you know, paper that kind of gives some interesting insight into what could possibly be done with a resistance training protocol to embrace this effect or to engage this effect. And that is a study that came from Sweden, published in final form of 2011, almost a year ago. And it was from the Astron Laboratory of Work Physiology in Sweden. And it was part of the renowned Karolinska Institute that's over there in Stockholm. And this group did a very interesting study. What they wanted to show was that at a molecular level, they could confirm the adverse outcome of combining endurance and strength training, or concurrent training as they called it, on the molecular responses, in particular the mitochondrial biogenesis and the elaboration of PGC1 and its associated compound PRC. So they did a study in which the subjects either did endurance, you know, training by itself and resistance training by itself, but also combining endurance and strength training to see the responses. And their hypothesis was that because of some performance studies that had preceded their study, they assumed that there would be a negative crosstalk between the two types of training protocols that would blunt the normal robust response to endurance training of a PGC1 alpha increase. Much to their surprise, and contrary to their working hypothesis, their results demonstrated that when you combined endurance training and resistance training, with the endurance training coming first, and this is typical high intensity training, right, not, you know, the kind of endurance training that cyclists do. It's the kind of thing that in my Body RX Metabolic Advantage program, for example, there's a 15-minute HIT protocol, which is relatively simple-minded, but also relatively very effective. And that's the kind of protocol that was done here. And they followed that with a standard, you know, resistance training protocol, and then measured the adaptive signaling responses of mitochondrial biogenesis, and compared it with just the single mode endurance exercise protocol. And they showed that, in fact, adding resistance training following an endurance protocol markedly enhanced the responses on all the parameters that they were looking at. So the good news here is that the already well-documented profound changes in, you know, fat mass that accompany even modest increases in the mass and activity of the, you know, the fast twitch glycolytic fibers that are hypertrophied with weight training. We already know that that involves a very substantial reducing body fat mass. So added to that, if you embrace this idea of combining a brief, you know, HIT protocol followed by, you know, a more rigorous and, you know, high intensity weight training program, you could probably redouble your fat loss effects given the results.
That's impressive. But Scott, I know what our listeners are wondering right now. What if you were to take, inject an exogenous source of irisin? Would you get the same fat boosting effect without the exercise?
Well, the animal data suggests that that's actually true. And in fact, you know, the human literature is not, you know, replete with examples of this compound, obviously, because it's a relatively new substance. But the fact is that it's clearly apparent that a molecule that has these kinds of effects, which are independent of the exercise stimulus, if you could give it as, you know, a pure compound, would have enormous therapeutic potential. I mean, the potential usefulness of this type of compound exogenously administered, which essentially exerts a permissive effect on what we'll call browning of subcutaneous adipose tissue, an increase in thermogenesis, and multiple effects on cardiovascular metabolic risk factors, would have a great, you know, deal of merit as, you know, an injectable polypeptide.
When a fat cell, say, is brown, which means a white cell is turned brown, is that a permanent type of a situation where the fat actually turns into brown fat, or is it like a temporary type of conversion?
Well, again, the distinction white versus brown simply is, you know, in animals, the gross, you know, view or perspective of brown adipose tissue depots, it was given the name brown because of the color, and white is given the name because of its color. The distinction really is the concentration of deposits of UCP1 positive elements, and those are the things that you would use to measure a browning effect, not necessarily, you know, a change in color from brown or beige to a bright white color, but and vice versa. But the appearance of a number of deposits of these UCP1 positive granules in the adipose tissue. And if you could induce that spontaneously, you know, by injecting this polypeptide, the animal data suggests that the result is spectacular. And I think that's the reason that the lay press commentary was, you know, is this a simulated exercise? I think they called it a
exercise
pill or something.
Pill.
But
yeah.
Obviously, it's a polypeptide, so it would probably have to be, you know, an injectable compound. But insulin is an injectable.
Is it reasonable to believe?
Is it reasonable to believe that
athletes will start using this compound in the future? Do you see this as something that we might expect to see?
Well, I think there probably will be movement on, you know, trying to take it into the human therapeutic domain. I mean, the groups that have looked at this have already kind of segued in that direction. There are animal studies where they've, you know, given ridiculously high doses of the compound with the obvious purpose of seeing, you know, what LD50s and potential toxicities and things like that are. So it wouldn't surprise me if someone already has conducted the usual and customary, you know, animal trial where they do a range of doses that go from small to the absurd, and then, you know, sacrifice the animal and do pan autopsies anatomically and do a whole battery of biochemical determinations for toxicity and carcinogenicity. Once that is done, it clears the path for, you know, a new drug application to be undertaken. And it wouldn't surprise me, given the magnitude of the effect in animals, which is really quite shocking, in very small amounts, nanomolar amounts, this thing produces widespread changes. In fact, there are some indications that the well-documented muscle fiber type switching that is seen with enhancements of PGC1 alpha elaboration or messenger RNA production are responsible for fiber type switching. And, you know, you can get a fast fiber to display characteristics of a slow oxidative fiber just by giving this stuff parenterally. So again, and then the demonstration that this compound or its parent, PGC1, can be upregulated in response to a combined endurance followed by resistance training protocol, would suggest that resistance training athletes would get a huge effect from this. Now, again, there hasn't been any dramatic demonstration that this thing is anabolic. It basically is an energy compound that essentially mitigates body fat dramatically, and the consequences of having too much body fat and other metabolic.
It seems like it induces uncoupling, is what it does, and it wastes fuel energy. Would you?
Well, yeah. I mean, uncoupling are the major, you know, ways that, you know, protons in the mitochondrial tunnel are, you know, expended.
So we get hot taking
heat.
This substance. I'm sure you'd be sweating a lot probably using something like this.
You know, you would think that if you took enough of it, the thermogenic response would manifest in some kind of, you know, body temperature elevation. Again, you know, as I said, the interesting thing in current animal data that has used, you know, very large doses of this stuff appears to have been, you know, administered without evidence of toxicity. So it's an interesting compound for sure. And like I said, it's not terribly different from a lot of the multifunction cytokines that have already been well characterized. It seems to be produced in a similar manner from an upstream parent, in this case being PGC1-alpha, and has an intermediate type 1 membrane protein that's been designated, you know, FNDC5, but that protein is further processed, cleaved proteolytically to produce this single compound called
this iricin. Sounds exciting, Scott. I don't mean to cut you off, Scott, but we are out of time now, and I know a lot of people are going to want to hear much more about what you have to say. So stay tuned every week to Physique Star Radio and to Muscle University with Dave Palumbo and Scott Connolly. Scott, I will talk to you next week.
You bet. See you, Dave.
This has been another episode of Physique Star Radio, exclusively on RxMuscle.com. Be sure to visit Myotropics.com for the most innovative physique nutrition supplements available today.